Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Catola.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight for Cradle My Heart Radio. We are glad to have you with us. I'm your host, Kim Catola, and this is a pre-recorded program. If you want to know when we'll be up live, go to cradlemyheart.org and get a full look at the upcoming programs. And there are so many great resources on our website. Did you know there's a free ebook for men? That you can download. There are podcasts of previous interviews and, again, helpful articles. I hope that it is a biblical resource for your healing. So please be sure to check back often at cradlemyheart.org. Tonight, we are pleased to welcome Vicki Thorne, who founded Project Rachel. She's also the executive director of the National Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing, which is located in Milwaukee. And with her degree in psychology and a certificate in spiritual direction, she's also a bereavement facilitator trained by the American Academy of Bereavement and a prenatal loss facilitator certified by Resolve Through Sharing Prenatal Loss. And she also holds a certificate in trauma counseling. She's a longtime member of the Association of Prenatal and Perinatal Psychology and Health, and is also often invited as a workshop presenter, international speaker, and ministry leader. And Vicki, it's a pleasure to speak with you again and welcome you to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Oh, thanks, Kim. I'm just delighted to be with you to have this opportunity. You know, when we can reach out and touch people, God's working in powerful ways.
Project Rachel is, I believe, the first post-abortion outreach that was ever offered to anyone. Tell me about the founding of it, how it began, and the roots of Project Rachel.
Hey, you know, the roots of it were really set for me in high school. I had a friend. The school I went to was a day school, boarding school in rural Minnesota. I was a day student. She was a boarder. She came a year later. And we became very good friends. And the year between her sophomore and junior year, the summer between, she got pregnant. And her mother arranged an abortion for her at a large hospital in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And it wasn't legal yet, okay? It was illegal, but abortions were being done, okay? And that's a point I want to make. We have women who had abortions in World War One, World War Two, the Depression, and they were done by doctors, okay? You know, compassionate doctors, quote-unquote. But my friend really suffered after that abortion, and what I didn't realize until a little later when she started talking about it was that her brother was the father of that child, okay? So there was incest in the house, and my hunch is that that's why her mother sent her to the school. The mother had attended the school, too, but I think she was trying to protect my friend. But then my friend told me something that she hadn't told me before, and that was that she'd already had a baby, and she placed that baby for adoption. And over the years that we talked about this, she always ended every conversation in terms of the pain of the abortion with the following two sentences. I can live with the adoption. I can't live with the abortion. And nobody was talking about this, Kim. I was like, clearly this wasn't good for her, but I didn't know what to say to her. And all I could do was love her and support her and listen to her. And, you know, I watched her life cycle through all kinds of crazy destructive things with suicidality and drugs and an abusive husband. And I mean, the list was long, okay?
Vicki, you were young at that time, right?
Oh, I was in high school.
And how old was she when these pregnancies occurred?
She would have been, let me think a minute, she would have probably been between 15 and 16, because
okay.
I was like 17.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what this did to her in terms of her spirit, everything. I mean, every corner of her life was touched by this abortion, you know, because her mother was going to fix the problem. okay? And, you know, I went on to get a degree in psychology. That didn't help me understand what happened to her. And then this is one of those sort of, you know, God stories. The whole thing is a God story. We moved from Minneapolis to Milwaukee, and I didn't have a job. I was going to go to grad school, and the door closed a couple of times, and my husband was working on his PhD and writing his dissertation. So I thought, I'll wait. Okay. So we come here, and I am a Birthright volunteer because I discovered Birthright and thought, I could make a difference maybe by loving someone, and they wouldn't have to go through what my friend went through.
And if,
so I was a Birthright.
So if anyone listening is not familiar, Birthright is a pregnancy help movement, a pregnancy help organization.
It was actually the first one in the world, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of Canada. So I'm doing that, and my husband, we became friends with my husband's cousin, who was very active in the church, and his wife. They had no children, and we were kind of like their kids. And we went back to Minnesota in the summers, and the second summer back, I get a phone call from someone I've never heard of who's offering me a job working in the Catholic Archdiocese here, working on empowering people to have a voice in the legislative process. Now, I've never taken a poli-sci course. Okay, this is not something I would aspire to. And so, you know, I sort of turned him down. I said, I'm not coming back till the fall, and you know, I'm thinking I have no credentials. I didn't apply for this job. So I came back. I met the man. Wonderful, awesome, awesome man. And but he'd hired a secretary, so I was off the hook. And then in November, he offered me the job again. And I decided, well, this job isn't going away. I guess I'll take it. And at that point, I was pregnant with our first daughter that was born. I had a miscarriage before that. And so I said, okay, but I'm pregnant and the baby's due in March, and if it's a fussy baby, I quit. He said, oh, fine. That's fine. No problem.
This is truly,
so I took the job.
It's truly inspired.
Well, the whole thing is really, Kim. You know, I look back on it and I go, oh, God has got such a sense of humor. So now I'm doing this job, but the Catholic bishops had called for someone in the diocese to be a Respect Life director to really work on life issues, okay? And this is, I mean, this is shortly after they did this, okay? And so, you know how it is, a void, you know, sucks people in? Well, suddenly I was the Respect Life Director, and I was doing the legislative piece, I was doing education. But you know what? The bishops had called for a ministry for women whose lives have been touched by abortion, and nobody was doing it yet. There were a couple little ones, but there was nothing that was organized. And it just spoke to my heart. And I went to my archbishop, who said, I will give you whatever money you need to do that. It took me 7 years to find enough people to do a training and to try and figure out, okay, how are we going to be able to connect the people who need the help with the kind of help that they need, be it spiritual through a clergy person, a spiritual director, mental health issues, okay? And when it came together in 6 weeks, start to finish, based on someone that I wanted to come and speak, and someone else was bringing them to the city from Rome. And we had 60 of our clergy, and we had a number of counselors and others there, and I invited the press. And the woman who came was the religion reporter. At that time, Milwaukee had two papers. She was worked with the morning paper. And she called me at home that night, and I did not announce the ministry yet. Okay, this was just the first training of its kind in the world. All right, that's newsworthy. And she said to me, we're going to break the story about the ministry tomorrow morning. And I said, who told you that? Well, she never did tell me who told me that, but I think it was my archbishop, because there were only three of us in the room who knew the rest of the story. And I said, well, the only problem if you do that, Mary Beth, is that women will call tomorrow, and I'm not ready to help them yet. Just because I train people today doesn't mean I've got this whole thing worked out. Okay, she seemed to understand that. I said, the training is, you know, that's newsworthy. Thought we were off the hook. The next morning, the phone rang 7 a.m. It's a radio station here in Milwaukee, and they want to interview me on the front page lead story in the morning paper on the ministry, and I hadn't even seen the story. So I had to send my husband, the journalist, to get me the paper very quickly. And all day long, the press, the media came, and that day it went around the world. That's a God thing. I could not have arranged that under any circumstances.
Which, I mean, if anyone is listening today who's under 30 thinking, oh, it went around the world, you know, back in the day, we were talking about, what, 1980? something, 84. That's really remarkable because the internet was not at our disposal, and for people to have picked up on this, it just displays that the need was there. We'll talk more in our upcoming segment about Project Rachel's roots, but also about the mission. With about a minute on this segment remaining, Vicki, just tell us about the mission of Project Rachel and the ministry model for those who are not yet familiar with it.
Yeah, the ministry model is really a holistic model in terms of we can help someone with whatever they need. They want to start with a discussion of God and, you know, does God hate me? Whatever the questions are. I need to start with a mental health professional. You know, there's issues. So it was designed to be holistic. It was designed to be broad-based. So it's in 160 dioceses in the United States and started in other countries. So if I need help, I can find help within my geographic area with a live person. And it was the understanding that many women have many wounds. The abortion sometimes is a symptom of other things that have happened to her that are incredibly tragic and painful as well. And so it was designed to be a full spectrum kind of model. And for men, for grandparents, for siblings, and other people involved as well.
Sure.
But we started out, obviously, with women.
Sure. And so a person who identifies that they need help would probably start with her local priest or her
church. There's even a phone number. I mean, it's absolutely anonymous if she wants it to be that way. Diocese either have a website or a phone number. You make contact. Where would you like to start? You're given a number. Okay, like here's a priest. And then it is up to you to own making that contact when you're ready.
But sometimes maybe not a priest. Someone might want to talk with a friend or a peer instead.
Yeah.
So you're training people across a spectrum to offer wide variety of help. All right, yeah. Vicki Thorne is our guest, and she's the founder of Project Rachel, which, as she mentioned, is now a worldwide outreach at the parish level through local Catholic churches to help those impacted by abortion, not only women, but other family members as well. And we'll hear about how the ripples go through a family to affect fathers and grandparents and siblings. We'll talk also about prevention and efforts by Project Rachel and by our guest, Vicki Thorne, to help women make the right choice before it ever even comes to a pregnancy. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim Cotola tonight talking with Vicki Thorne of Project Rachel. Stay with us. More coming up.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Back to Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola.
Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio tonight, talking with Vicki Thorne of Project Rachel, which is an outreach of the Catholic Church at the local parish level. Each church has, that is part of the program, has designated people who are contact points for someone who needs help in the aftermath of abortion. And Vicki's vision for this came out of understanding the needs and the hurts just by befriending someone who had been through a pregnancy that resulted in abortion, as well as a pregnancy that resulted in giving up a child for adoption. And there was incest involved. And, you know, Vicki, your unique way of being informed on this issue, I think it gives you also a unique perspective. When people raise objections and they say, well, women do need abortion because of incest, talk about the impact of abortion on your friend who was an incest victim.
Oh, yeah. You know, for her, that abortion didn't set her free. That abortion was another rape. And so often I hear women who have either been raped or, and incest is, but, you know, there's an extra piece there, talk about the abortion being this kind of physical attack on their body. There's no other language for it, okay? It brings up trauma memories. It brings up all kinds of things. And that question for some women of, you know, I was the innocent party in that incestuous attack, all right? This child was also an innocent party. And that comes later, because when I'm in the midst of the crisis, the part of my brain that's working is the amygdala, and the amygdala is the fear center of my brain. It's not the logical part of my brain. It's survival, okay? And so often, women are so fearful, and we don't understand that that's the part of their brain working. You know, they'll tell you later, how could I do that? It was like somebody else did it. And it's not an excuse. It's an accurate description, because it's this gut response. I have to get rid of this problem. It's going to kill me. And then after the fact, when my brain goes back to being online, I go, wait a minute, what just happened here? And so those are really critical things. Let me go back to something you said, though. Let me just flash back for a minute here.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, you talked about Project Rachel being parish-based. Project Rachel is really diocese-based.
Thank you for correcting that.
Yeah, women don't have to be afraid of going to see their priest or someone in their church. The point is, I can call this anonymous number, and I can be sent to somebody I've never seen before.
Really important distinction,
and
absolutely.
It's critical. Yeah, mm-hmm. I just wanted to make that clear.
No, thank you.
People go, absolutely. I don't want to see my priest. No, you don't have to.
The majority of people probably don't want to see someone they know initially.
No.
Well, and Vicki, so tell me about what you've discovered as you've trained and as you've educated yourself on this. What are the primary issues? I know when I wrote Cradle My Heart, to me there were 10 key questions that abortion brings up. You know, you mentioned one, does God hate me? How can I face myself was another one. Is it really wrong? Is it a sin? Tell me what you have encountered as the questions, and particularly the spiritual issues that women and men need to resolve after their participation in abortion.
Yeah, I don't think I'm as succinct as you are on that one. I was just thinking about that. But, you know, this question of longing to be healed, all right, the fear of God for many people, this is the unforgivable sin in their head, in their heart, okay? You know, some churches at least talk about it. And so there's this great fear that to say no to a life that God created is kind of the top of the sin list, if you will, all right? So there's that enormous fear, that question about forgiving myself. How can I ever forgive myself for this? Where's my baby? You know, did I take everything from that child? And over the years of having dealt with people coming out of other faith traditions, not Christian, okay, this is a real serious issue. If I'm an agnostic or I'm an atheist, I don't believe in an afterlife. That's the end of the road, okay? In China and Japan, in Japan in particular, and in Taiwan, since the 1950s, okay, that's long before I was thinking about this. I was hardly born at that point. They've had mourning ceremonies in their temples because they believe in reincarnation, that if a baby is aborted, we've ended the cycle of that child's spiritual life. Done, finished, cannot continue. And so there are ceremonies to appease these spirits, because they say they turn ugly and create mischief in their families. Well, when you see the manifestations, it's the same that we see. It's a universal phenomena of grieving parents, okay? But it's interesting to see that the two things that are different from culture to culture is how do I spiritually explain it and how do I grieve it, okay? So if I'm in Africa, I might grieve differently in terms of the process. Okay. If I'm Hispanic, it might be a little different. But those are the pieces that are there. And then that question about can I ever be a mother again? The fear that's there, because then sometimes miscarriages follow that, or there's a series of abortions and then there might be damage. Okay. And what God restores in this is He gives us back our mother's identity, because our mother's identity is truncated. And you see that women who are unhealed, who have babies afterwards, oftentimes have trouble bonding. They're very overly protective, but emotionally it's very hard for them to connect. And God fixes that. God restores that. And one of the amazing things that's out there in science is that we women carry cells from every child we ever conceived the rest of our lives. And if we have an abortion or a miscarriage, we actually get more cells. I'm not sure what that's about, but it's there. It's scientific proof. So
And you know, you and I have talked about that before, and I want to linger on this thought for a minute because it's radical. Most people are not aware of this scientific fact coming out of, was it Tufts University, if I remember correctly, our conversation?
Tufts is one, and the other one is out in Seattle. Jaylee Nelson runs she's part of the Hutchinson Cancer Research Institute, but she's done yeoman's work. She's done tons of stuff, and she actually has a website up now on microchimerism, where things are getting plugged in.
It's called microchimerism, like a chimera,
yep.
Which is
like a chimera.
So Vicki, what you're saying is there is a physical reason why we cannot let go of the experience. There's a physical imperative here that's driving our emotions, and it's not something that is made up emotion or a spiritual problem.
No.
There's this spiritual component that the presence of the child lingers literally within our bodies.
And we pass those cells to other siblings. And so the babies who come afterwards can get cells from us from previous siblings. And when you work with siblings, they sometimes say things like they don't know about the abortion. But they'll say something like, I always thought I was supposed to have an older brother or an older sister. And they're usually pretty sex specific. Sometimes they'll say, you know, older brothers and sisters, but that might be multiple abortions and miscarriages. But it's so incredible when you think about how God made us, that there's this connection there. Plus, we carry the cells of our mothers and our grandmothers. Okay? This continuity, you know, in scripture, and I don't remember, I apologize, I don't remember the exact site, but, you know, who begat who. Well, there it is, okay, this connection that's there. And, you know, to know that the partner I choose maybe makes an impact even on what these cells do in my body. But we know that in some circumstances they help our bodies to heal. If we're sick, they gather there like they're trying to fix it. Well, wow. Okay. That's an amazing, miraculous thing. And again, we don't, you know, the problem with the abortion debate, in my opinion, is that we tend to get sort of stuck in the morality and we don't expand it to the science. And here's the science that says you're still changed by that. And it explains why, even if I don't have a faith base of any kind, I may still be grieving for that child. And you know, and I'm puzzled by that. You know, why would that bother me? I believe abortion's a woman's right, blah, blah, blah. And then here is still this nagging question. And so that understanding of how fearfully and wonderfully made we are is an important piece.
Vicki Thorne.
And it's something for us to share, you know?
Vicki Thorne is our guest from Project Rachel. She's also an educator on the theology of the body as well as the biochemistry of sex, getting into some of those areas as we talk about this need to find a satisfactory answer after abortion. And if we know these scientific facts, if we know the basis for our hope, there can indeed be a resolution to the grief. I promise you that. If you're listening and you say, well, that's devastating. I'm always going to have to live with this. No, that's not the answer. The answer is, okay, once you know the truth, now you can begin to address it. Now you can begin to understand what God has said and His promises for us and how to gain the new mindset that allows us to live in freedom in Christ. Vicki Thorne, our guest, we're talking about Project Rachel and more, and we'll continue after a short break. Stay with us. This is CradleMyHeart.org.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Back live to Cradle My Heart with Kim Cattola.
Thanks for listening to Cradle My Heart Radio tonight. Our guest is Vicki Thorne of Project Rachel and the National Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing. She is the founder of one of the oldest, if not the oldest, post-abortion outreaches and ministries, which is Project Rachel, which started way back in 1984, just a decade out from the legalization of abortion. And if you're just joining us, Vicki has shared that the church called for it and said, we know we're going to be needing this ministry. I'm sure, Vicki, the women were already showing up, and the churches were already, you know, wondering how best to address these issues. As we think about this and as we think about the compassion of post-abortion outreach, I want you to talk about one of the subjects that I know that you have some expertise in. You've written about the role of stress in making the abortion decision. And you talked in an earlier segment, too, about the role of fear and what happens to our actual brain function. Again, a scientific component to this that I think people miss. And I'd like to have you talk about this because, again, I think it leads to greater understanding and really release from some of the emotions that we experience.
Well, you know, Kim, I think so often, I mean, having heard many women share their stories over time, you know, this question of how could I do that? Why did I do that? Is so often part of it. And it's like, you know, I'm caught in it. It seems like the rational decision. Everybody says it's the right thing to do, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm walking through what happened and I can't figure out what really happened to me. And one of the things that we have to understand, well, there's several things, but one is if I'm very stressed when I'm little, okay, meaning in utero, mom was maybe fearful. The doctor said there was something wrong with me. I may have been in a neonatal intensive care unit when I was born because of a traumatic birth issue of some kind. I may spend time full-time, and this is politically incorrect, but full-time daycare the first 3 years of my life may cause me to be extra stressed. You know, the family broke up. There's just a million possibilities here. One of the things that's interesting is, one, our brain develops differently. It becomes what's really, it's called a trauma brain or a stress brain. And that means that when I am stressed, I go from 0 to 100. You know, my heart is palpitating, my adrenal glands are pumping. And if I didn't grow up with that kind of brain, it takes me a while to get stressed. Okay, I'm still thinking pretty clearly. I'm not feeling real good, but I'm still thinking. But immediately what happens with this is that I go to the fear center of my brain that I alluded to in the amygdala. And when I am in that, this is a survival part of the brain that God built, okay? And it's flight or fear. And this question of self-preservation versus species preservation. I mean, this is a drive, okay? This is not rational. This is a drive. And I am in the position of being, it's self-preservation that comes first. It's one of the things I want to ask God about when we get, you know, when we get to heaven. How did that work? I mean, but species preservation comes before self-preservation comes before species preservation. So I have to survive. Now, when you think about it, it is how my children would also survive. But in this moment of an abortion decision, it's not how my child will survive. And so I am driven to make this decision that will make this go away. And so many women are in that sort of position. And then they're in the position of parents who have said to them, oh, honey, this is going to interfere with your life, something fierce. We want you to be a, you know, doctor, dentist, lawyer. You can't have a baby. An abortion would be a good thing. Or friends, you know, girls chip in money for another girl to have an abortion, boyfriends. And I want to make one thing clear as we're talking here. The men involved in abortions are not all the bad guys because they're portrayed that way. We've done 2 conferences over time on men and abortion, and the stories the men tell would just rip your heart out. They would have laid their life down in front of a car to be able to save this baby, and they couldn't do it. Or they find out after the fact that it's happened. Are there forcers? Yes, there are. But there are also men who get caught in what other people say.
Well,
you know, people say to guys, you can't do this. You know, it's her choice. It's her body.
And you know, Vicki,
and so he's blindsided.
And I'm sure you've talked
to
those men who did force, who also have that anguish to deal with, the guilt along with the grief to work through.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and even the men who don't force feel guilty.
Right.
I should have I should have done something.
Right.
I didn't know what to do. And so that's a big piece of it. You also have some men who are forcers, though, who really don't come to a spiritual sense of this. They're narcissists, and they will many times have 5, 6, 7, 8 abortions under their belt. I had a woman who called me one time, and she was living with this guy. She was in her 30s. She'd had an abortion many years ago, and she was pregnant and delighted. And he told her he intended to harass her into having an abortion, and he would harass her until, I mean, this was very calculated, until 38 weeks. And she would call me every week, and I would prop her up, okay? And I said to her, would he call me, do you think? Could I talk to him? And I said, do you think he's been involved in abortions before or anything? Oh, no. So he calls me. I said, well, what's the deal? Well, there's never a good time to have a baby. Now, they had plenty of money. They had plenty of resources, okay? He had old wounds from someplace. So I said to him, have you been involved in an abortion before? He went, oh, yeah, 6 or 7 times. I don't remember how many. And I thought, ah, there it is. This is a power. It's a power issue. But that question of the men that are there is an important one. And
so sometimes the stress is not just from the fear of flight. It's actual outside pressure from the people around you.
It's outside stress that multiplies. It does is then multiply the stress.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's telling me I have to have an abortion. And my parents have said, if you ever come home pregnant, you're out of here. I mean, you are gone. You are out of here. So there's not a resource for her to be able to regroup. And as I said, we can't see into someone's brain and see how damaged she is. And I mean this in a very compassionate sense. This, having lived in stress my whole life, sends my brain, as I said, into this mode of I have to survive. And so that's an important piece for us to understand in terms of women who choose abortion. So often there's such fear, and there's such they're lost. They're just lost. And we have to understand that, because the society also makes women out to be, they're all cool, calm, collected, you know, this is the best choice. And the fact is, there weren't other choices for them. They didn't know where to find resources.
Right.
We have to change the language.
The stereotype is a woman full of social support, with great health care, soberly making a decision, I've not met that person yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. In all the years of doing this, I have never met that woman.
So, Vicki, you talked about, you know, the fact that woundedness may be also driving the decision and maybe hardening the hearts of those who make the decision. You mentioned it in men, but I've seen it in women too. You know, Dr. Teresa Burke has done great work on this, talking about, you know, post-traumatic reenactment.
Right,
where
the reenactment stuff.
If you keep doing it, it's less stressful each time. But I want to ask you about the work that you've done, kind of segue into the work that you've done on the woundedness of our culture, that for Gen X and Gen Y, we're all wounded now.
Oh, and see, the culture has tipped so much. You know, not that women didn't get pregnant before, not that families didn't break down, but you look at the statistics, and the society has become incredibly, incredibly wounded. And just to touch briefly on the points that I talk about when I do this, you know, I talk about the impact of the pill, that the pill made us choose different partners than we would have, that children became possessions, so it's my call, if you know, what I do with this. Children became oopses because I'm supposed to have my, you know, perfect daughter, perfect son, and then oops, here's the other person who now has an existential wound. I'm a mistake. And, you know, those people can be helped by simply hearing that God didn't respect their parents' plan. God wanted them here. And you watch their face light up like you handed them the biggest gift in the world, because you did. Okay. In you know, the sexual, the whole revolution that came with the pill and all that sort of thing. Then abortion came online. And again, it isn't only the woman and the man, it's the siblings, it's the, you know, it's the aunts and the uncles and the cousins. You know, in our extended family, one of my daughters is surrounded by 4 aborted cousins. And I didn't know this. And it unfolded, you know, as she grew older. But when she was little, she said to me, she was 6, she said, Mom, why don't I have any cousins in my family, in this family, my age? She said, God gypped me. And that hurt so bad, I didn't know what to tell her. And then over time, the stories of the lost cousins have come to the forefront. So So everybody's wounded in that, in terms of how we parent, in terms of relationships broken, all those things. Then we became more mobile. We moved all over the place, and we no longer had the support of families that would have helped us in the past. In the past, even if my family was crazy, I had grandma and grandpa around. I had aunts. I had neighbors, people who cared about me and who I could relate to. You know, in the old days when women got pregnant, many times they went to live with family in another place. That's not there anymore. That's not an option. And that we don't know our family system either, okay, because we uproot and go places. The whole zero population growth movement, children were a terrible thing, and now that's been replaced. They've changed their name because of we're at zero in many places. But, you know, the green movement is moving into that. You know, to have children is, oh, there's this terrible carbon footprint. You know, there's the book out there about eat your dog because your dog has a bigger carbon footprint than your SUV. I mean, this is serious stuff. What do you do with that? You know, movies, starting in the 50s with The Bad Seed out of Canada. For the first time in literature, children were inherently evil. Before that, they never were. They were naughty, they were mischievous, but they weren't evil. You know, The Omen, The Exorcist, Rosemary's Baby, this sense of evil in the child got multiplied with the whole zero population growth movement. You know, kids are we don't even know, bad. We shouldn't have them. And then we've got the whole piece about divorce. You know, how many families come apart? And we don't know that if my father, my biological father, is missing, it changes when I get my period. And that girls who are missing their biological father get their period earlier and are more likely to be sexually active than girls whose fathers are present. And this is not only parenting, this is biology. These things called pheromones, which are scent molecules of affiliation that signal all kinds of things to us. My father slowed down my sexual maturity. If he's missing, I get my period sooner, but I get it even sooner if there's a strange male in the house that I'm not related to.
Is that so? Does that tie into early puberty?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of the things.
Wow.
It's one of the things.
Vicky,
but we don't want to talk about it, right?
Sure.
I mean, you know, everybody needs divorce, but no, it's one of the things.
Vicky Thorne is our guest. We're going to take a short break. Sorry to interrupt you, time for a short break, and then we'll continue. Hold on. Vicky will finish that thought when we come back from a break. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. If you just joined us, you can listen to the entire interview and when we post it as a podcast at cradlemyheart.org. And, of course, you'll find links to Vicky's organization there as well. Stay with us here tonight with Vicky Thorne on Cradle My Heart.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola.
Welcome back to Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim Cotola with Vicky Thorne tonight. Vicky is with Project Rachel. She's the founder of Project Rachel. She's also the executive director of the National Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing. So we've been talking about the wounds of Generation X and Generation Y. What's the main reason why it's important for anybody to understand that, that these wounds that our culture is laboring under, why do we need to know about that, and what difference does it make?
Well, it makes a difference because it helps us to understand where the problems are coming from, okay? And that's an important piece. And I wanted to add one quick thing on the back of what I was saying about girls missing their fathers. It's also the case that if a mom, a single mom, and this is not to attack single moms, but if a single mom is raising a son, he's likely to have potentially elevated testosterone during his teen years. Now, okay, how do I act out with that? Well, sexually, you know, risk-taking behavior. Those are serious issues. Boys need to have a male in their life, and this is, again, biological, who sets his testosterone level. You know, and single moms used to have other people, other men, their brothers, uncles, grandpas, men who took men, young men aside and said, this is how we behave. And part of it is just the contact, okay? But it's important that we understand this because in seeing the woundedness here, we begin to understand that as a society we're wounded. And healing is so critical for any one of these pieces, okay, to help people who are the children of divorce to heal because there's enormous wounds. To understand that if I've been in full-time daycare, I might be really stressed. That might be an issue. And I think that some of the stuff that comes, the bullying that comes, is coming out of daycare because there aren't consistent caregivers who help to resolve aggression issues, okay? But we must understand, and we all have an obligation to make it a better world one person at a time. And that might mean that I just offer a hug to the teenager who lives down the block or who comes over with my son, and that might make a big difference for them, okay? The elderly person that we acknowledge, and maybe they need a hug too. But we have lost the true intimacy that was in society that enabled people to grow up in families and be loved and supported and have people who would help them, even if they made a mistake. We're sinful people. We've always made mistakes from the get-go. Now, you remember Adam and Eve? That's how they got thrown out of the garden. You know, but it's there. But the community used to be, I think, more secure and more life-affirming. Mm. And now we are becoming increasingly mechanized, you know, and we didn't even get to this stuff about talking about surrogacy and what does that mean when I'm carrying a baby I'm not related to who's going to carry my cells the rest of its life and vice versa.
Well, and there was that horrific story about, was it Sherry Shepherd, one of the hosts on The View, who hired a surrogate, but then when the marriage broke down said she didn't want the baby.
There's a bunch of those out there.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so, and I'm not trying to pick on anybody individually, but, I mean, that's all part of our culture, that anybody would consider that acceptable. Anybody would consider that acceptable.
Yeah.
So, Vicki, I want to close on, I want to change gears as we have 7-8 minutes here remaining, and talk about abortion stigma. You engaged recently in a post that we had on Facebook, and I really appreciated your input on this. A young writer, still in her 20s, who's mom of two, has experienced just horrific miscarriage grief and is pregnant again. And she wrote a post, Becky Thompson is her name, and if you missed that interview, you can go and listen to the podcast at cradlemyheart.org. But Becky wrote a post that went viral on Facebook saying that abortion had changed the discussion of miscarriage, and because we deny that it's a baby and abortion, then we also deny the humanity of babies who are miscarried. Talk about why abortion is not discussed. Talk about the problem of stigma of miscarriage as well as abortion. Just this whole idea of stigma, where it comes from, and how best to overcome it.
I don't know how we overcome it, but we have to break the silence. That's the first thing. And, you know, my experience, my first miscarriage, was in the 70s, and so not long after Roe v. Wade. But that acknowledgement, this is a spontaneous abortion, that's the language that was used and still is used in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
There really was not, the staff didn't know what to do with this miscarriage. I mean, this was a big teaching hospital in Minneapolis. And they all stood around. Everybody came down because it was a slightly later miscarriage, you know, and the teaching, you know, the interns are down there, the residents are down there. I mean, like nothing like losing a baby in a crowd. And nobody knew what to say to me. And for my husband and myself, this was a significant loss. And what I say to parents is every baby you conceive is unique. Now, you may not carry it to term, but your life was changed, even if it was 3 months or 2 months. And as a society, we have to speak to that, all right? And, yeah, and again, if we're a pro-life society, life is precious. All life is precious. But we, again, maybe as individuals, have to be better about being present when something is going on. To say to the parents, I'm so sorry for your loss, to give them a gift when there's a miscarriage in our family, the Christmas after, if I can find it. I always give them an ornament, like an angel holding a baby, and say, remembering the baby that changed your life. To encourage parents to name their children, because they're like, oh, it's too early, it's too little. No, you know, by 4 weeks after conception, that's before you know you're pregnant for sure, those cells are already in your body. And your husband smells you and knows you're pregnant without that official little blue line, okay? So everybody's touched in the system. He's already his body started to change. That happens in abortions too. And to be pastorally sensitive, to offer a blessing, you know, I say oftentimes to clergy, when we do Mother's Day and Father's Day and we offer a blessing to the, you know, mothers and the fathers, and, you know, we say, oh, women, you know, the women who are mothers stand up, but you know what? The aborted women don't stand up.
That's right.
And the women who've had miscarriages don't stand up because there is this stigma. No one knows, and it's a big secret. And so my suggestion to them is let the women sit, have the men stand up and pray, remembering those who've lost their children to abortion, to miscarriage. Let's talk about it. They're part of the family system, and we have an obligation, I think, to companion those parents, because otherwise this is buried so deeply in the family.
Well, and I think some of
it, their other kids.
Some of it may be, some of the problem in the church may be rooted in the incomplete theology of certain church members.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you just pick out a Bible verse about, you know, childlessness is a curse, or if you just pick out a Bible verse about, you know, whether or not baptism is for babies, you know, you can go ahead and decide that, you know, the humanity is in doubt, therefore best not to say anything and give false hope. I mean, I'm giving people...
Yeah.
I'm giving a lot of grace to say that that's why they would remain silent. But I think, and I think that problem is there in the hearts of a lot of clergy members. I can't speak for a Catholic clergy, but I know in evangelical circles there's just a lot of confusion. And I've heard from John MacArthur and others that it's not taught at seminary. I think when there's an absence of truth, all sorts of taboo and stigma will fill in those blanks.
Well, and see, for some Catholic clergy, they're aware, because sometimes it is taught. I teach it. When I do training, we talk about this and how to be pastorally present. But a lot of them, especially the older guys, they weren't exposed to that. And it is. It's a void in our congregations. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to say. You know, I had a friend whose pastor, she had an abortion. He administered to her. She got married. They had two kids. The third child died at delivery. And she called her pastor, who said to her, oh, you know, this question of baptism. Oh, we don't baptize dead babies. And she called me, and I knew him. And I'm sort of pushy on occasion. And I called him and said, get to the hospital, because if you don't go to that hospital, she's never going to be in your church again or any church. You know her story. She needs you there. You don't have to say anything profound. You just have to go say, I'm sorry, and offer a blessing. And, we need to help our pastors with that, too, because you're right. They aren't trained. They don't know what to do. And it's so painful, Kim. You know that, you know. And then we're alone, and we don't know where to turn.
Vicki, I'll just give you the last word. We've got about a minute remaining. What you would say to someone listening tonight who is just thinking about starting the journey toward healing after abortion?
Well, my word would be there's hope, that, you know, God is there. Healing is possible, but we have to take the step. And one of the things I say to women and men is that, you know, there's a risky prayer I invite them to say. And the prayer is, God, I give you permission to heal me, because it's the prayer that opens the door of our heart. You know, long ago, our grandmas had the picture of Jesus knocking on the door and there's no doorknob on his side. Well, that's that prayer. It's the doorknob. And to know that if you engage in this, God is going to heal you and set you free, and that your wounds will become gift to someone else. They're never wasted. God uses everything that happens to us in our life for the good of his kingdom. And that would be my message.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to know more about Vicki's ministry, you can go to cradlemyheart.org and you'll find links there, or Google her at the National Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing, which is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Vicki Thorne, founder of Project Rachel, thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Oh, thank you, Kim, and thanks for all you do to promote healing.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.